Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, I am Chad Wesley Smith and this is another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I am joined today, as always, the notorious MAX, Max Montana. Well, apparently joined twice by the notorious MAX, Max Montana, and this guy, Mark Smelly Bell. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
Hi.
Maximum.
Hi. I'm right.
Guests, how are you doing today? So very happy to have our good friend Mark here.
I can see that you're happy underneath this table.
Yeah,
that's why we put him next to you.
No one knows if we're wearing pants under here or not. They've never guessed right.
Underwear?
I see what you did there. Very happy to have Mark here. I think Max and I have both been on PowerCast twice.
I believe so.
Two times
like
each.
That, yeah.
You must be pretty hard up for guests these days.
It's not easy getting getting good content, you know, so... Yeah. I have to bring in some people that are smart every once in a while.
Today's episode is brought to you by Milligrams and Kilograms. The more you take, the more you make. It's a lifestyle. And we're just excited to talk to Mark about all things slingshot, super training. Just a big deal these days.
You know what I liked about this headquarters that we're in right now?
Mm-hmm.
The most was the bathroom with the with the matches.
Mm.
I love that. It's a very nice corporate touch in there. Because sometimes I take shits that are so bad that they just need to be lit on fire.
All right. Stop trying to derail this into a PowerCast poop story. This is a place of professionalism.
Yeah. Wow.
All professionalism here. Made up lifestyle brands. Sweating. Not poop stories. That's not
no
what
poop
we do.
Stories?
That's not what we do here.
Well, I didn't have a poop story in there, but I just thought it was great that you can light your turds on fire here at Jugger HQ. Yeah. Jugger Bear.
Yeah, got to be prepared.
You going to let everybody know about the launch of JuggerBear.com?
It's mentioned almost every podcast.
JuggerBear.com coming maybe summer of 2018.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All the needs. whatever you got, we got it covered.
A very particular audience.
Yeah. All right, where were we? All right, so now you're all ripped and stuff. Yeah, we see you on the internet.
Crossfitting.
Yeah, crossfatting. Doing
the C word.
Yeah. What's the current training diet looking like for you these days?
You know, basically the goal was to hit a 600-pound bench and I got a hold of my fattest, strongest, smartest friend.
That's me.
at least
one of those things.
To help accomplish that mission and ended up with a 578 bench, which was a 22-pound meat PR. Then proceeded to try the 600 and ended up with another pec tear. So, you know, just from getting banged up a bunch at that point, I was going to just kind of heal up, and I was going to see where I was at because it's only 22 more pounds away from a 600-pound bench. So,
which I think it was there. The training, everything was going good.
And I drilled that fucking 578.
Yeah, it was the tricep pushdowns that day.
Yeah. And so anyway, I was injured going into the competition itself, but was still able to end up with a big PR thanks to your training methodology, sir. Appreciate it. But kind of long story short is I went to make a comeback again from that and benched 505. I think it was on like the fourth rep and I was just flying with it. I've never felt so strong before. And, again, something went in the pack again. And
that was in your bodybuilding.com, right?
Yeah.
Oh, this is recently.
Yeah. Not that long ago. Well, it wasn't that recent. It wasn't this time at bodybuilding.com, but it was previous time.
Oh.
So then I came back from that and started pressing again, and I did a 500-pound bench for three sets of two reps. Strength was starting to come back. The reps felt fairly easy for the day, but the pain level that I had in my elbow was about an 8. And I was like, well, 500 isn't that close to 600. And it's just, I don't know how much sense this is making. So took about 2 weeks off, came back into the gym, started my training again, started pushing around 450, 475. The pain level's now at like a 10. And I'm like, this literally makes no sense. This is not smart. What would I advise myself to do? You know, what would I advise somebody else to do in this situation? I tell them to fucking stop, and I tell them to lighten up the weight and maybe just do something different. Fucking go collect stamps or something. So that day was pretty much – what's that?
How's your stamp collection coming along?
It's huge now. So that day was pretty much the day that I decided, you know what, I need to make some huge changes. I have to lose weight. I have to shift things into a totally different direction. And so that's what I've been working on. I've been trying to get back into more athletic stuff, being able to move a little bit more, being able to sprint, being able to jump, being able to do pull-ups, being able to just to, for a long time, you know, years of powerlifting and putting myself in compromising positions and just forcing my body to get too stiff and not, you know, opening it up to anything else, I became fucking very, very one-dimensional. And so as a kid growing up, I was very athletic, not the best, but I could mimic and do a lot of different things when it came to running, jumping, throwing a ball, whatever that kind of stuff. I was always pretty good at it.
Going off definitely, the top rope.
Definitely going off the top rope. Definitely a lot better at that than I was at school. And so I wanted to get back to some of that. So that's kind of where I'm at now. Been doing all different kinds of stuff. Started with some boxing. Actually, the boxing was too much on me. It was too stressful right away because it was too much of a change. So I had to stop that. And I had to progressively work my way into some of the stuff that I'm doing now, which is, you guys see, quite a bit of conditioning, quite a bit of cardio work, and it's a lot of fun.
Are you posting that on like an Instagram account? Do you use Instagram?
No, it's on a private link.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a special option on juggerbear.com.
But yeah, it's been great, and it's been fun just to mix things up and to try different things. I don't have somebody will say, "Oh, what are you training today?" I'm like, "I don't know."
Yeah.
Like, what do you have planned? Nothing. And it feels fucking great. It feels great to not be, like, responsible for these sets and reps weights that I've had to lift in the past.
The number becomes a thing. Like, you dread, like, I have to do this number for this many reps, and it starts to just kind of wear on you after a while doing that.
You get anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there many, many times. Like, both of the last 2 years, get to that point where it's like you're just beat up and it's time for a change and you just want to go in with no plan. Now, the big difference between when you do that and when I do that is you get all muscly looking, these weird things on your arms.
Leaned out.
Yeah. Is that what it's called?
I think so. Yeah, the war on carbs is responsible for that ketogenic style diet, keeping the fat content high, proteins moderate, and then you just try not to intentionally eat any carbohydrates, which gets to be a little bit tricky, but in my opinion, there's no magical diet. There's a lot of recipes and a lot of different things that will work for a lot of different people. But in my opinion, the magic of a ketogenic diet is it seems to be the best diet for people that have developed bad habits, you know, eating in the middle of the night, having carb cravings, you know, just overeating, all these things we associate with being heavy or heavier than we want to be. And so for me, it's worked really, really well. And then the coolest part has been sharing that journey on my Instagram account and YouTube account, and then having so many other people follow it. I have people coming up to me, you know, somebody come up to me saying they got into powerlifting. That's fucking awesome. I really think that's amazing, because that can help change someone's lives, because now they have these different goals and things like that. But really, when someone comes up to me and tells me they lost 50 pounds or 100 pounds, that has a huge impact on me, because I know that that really changes not only that person's life, but it changes their own outlook on themselves, which I think is why the fuck we're in the gym in the first place. So that's been an amazing part of this journey.
So, you know, when I hear people talk about the keto diet and maybe drawbacks to the keto, it's like a lack of energy for hard training. But obviously you're training really hard, The stuff you're doing seems like it would be very glycogen demanding.
Right.
The style of training you're doing now, pushing sleds and doing all that kind of stuff. And so our friend Dr. Mike has made a video on the Juggernaut channel about keto for athletes and why he thinks that that's not a good thing. And I know RP's got people taking in a lot of carbs intra.
What is Dr. Mike a doctor of?
Sport physiology with a sport nutrition.
I don't believe anything he says. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a huge fan of him, by the way. I like the stuff that you've posted with him in the past. I would just say ketogenic diet for... I don't really consider powerlifting much of a sport, you know, not to bash the sport, but it, I mean, I just kind of...
We've shared the same opinion.
I can kind of consider it a little bit more of a hobby, and I wouldn't suggest anyone to do a ketogenic diet and try to become the strongest powerlifter in the world.
Right.
That would be a mistake. The second that you mention diet to somebody, the second you start to explain to somebody what the diet's like, they immediately jump down your throat about the stuff that you just took away from them. Oh, I can't have any pasta? It's like, yeah, but you can have fucking bacon. You know? I can't have this, I can't have that. Yeah, but you get to have cheese, and you get to have this and that. There's some options that are still really good. You get to eat steak every day. It's like, fuck. There's some good and there's some bad that goes along with it. There's some give and some take every step of the way. The other thing I hear all the time, too, is people are like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to lose strength or my energy will be zapped. Well, do you want to just stop being so fucking fat or or do you want to complain about some of the side effects of the diet? Like any diet that you use, you're going to lose strength. The only way to not lose strength while dieting is if you lost a very, very small amount of body weight, a small percentage of your own body weight, or if you lost weight over a really long period of time. So if you lost 12 pounds in a year, you know, then you probably wouldn't notice any reduction. You'd actually probably be stronger per pound of body weight than you would otherwise. But you're always going to be stronger eating more. You're always going to be stronger being heavier rather than lighter. In most cases, there'll be kind of a point of diminished returns, which I've gone to that extreme, weighing 330 pounds. You know, at 290, I was my strongest, and when I played around with some different body weights, it just didn't work and didn't look pretty enough the way it looks on this.
Oh, there's only one body weight handsome.
5 years in a row, handsomest, super heavy
time champion.
So filling up a whole handful of rings.
What I hear more defenders of keto say, though, is that there's this sort of fat adaptive process, that they go from cutting out all the carbs and maybe they feel, you know, lethargic and lacking energy for their training for a week, 2 weeks, a month. Was there that kind of process for you?
No, not really. I keep it simple. I don't like pee on keto sticks. I don't draw blood. I have done things like that before. There's, you know, when it comes to some of these other things of checking whether I'm actually in ketosis and whether I'm fat adapted and all these, I don't pay attention to any of that shit. I don't count calories. I don't weigh anything except for myself. And when I, you know, when I start to say stuff like that, people get so pissed, and I'm not trying to force anyone to do stuff that they don't want to do. I'm just saying this is what worked really well for me. I think it can work really well for other people. Weighing your food every day seems to be meticulous, and it seems to be just a giant pain in the ass trying to write down the calories that you took in and all that stuff. For myself, the goal was to lose weight. I weigh myself every day, and then I'm accountable for seeing a reduction in body weight, and that's kind of the measure of what I use in terms of fat percentages to protein percent. I don't mess around with any of that stuff. I think that that's the micro, and that would be something that maybe you would look into as you dove deeper into it, or if you had a setback or a problem or weren't feeling well. Obviously, jumping into any form of diet, there's going to be some changes. There's going to be some rude awakenings when you are faced with those cravings and you're faced with those I call them pulses. You get these strong pulses, almost like when you have to throw up. You get a pulse of like, holy fuck, I think I have to puke. And then next thing you know, you were like in the bathroom throwing up into the fucking toilet. I feel the same addiction to food sometimes, where you get these pulses where you're like, I need pizza, I need pizza, I need pizza.
It's more of a reverse throw up. You throw it in.
Yeah. Some peristalsis going on, right? You kind of just keep thinking about that food, and next thing you know, there you are, fucking eating it again. But those pulses, those things will pass. You have to try to fulfill those things with other things, such as going for a walk, or such as maybe you overeat a certain meal, but you don't go off your diet. You don't, you know, deviate from the plan too much.
Do you feel like the keto diet? Because I've actually done them a long time ago. But do you feel like that it's
back when you used to work out?
Yeah, back when I actually lifted weights, which is a long time ago.
He was eating moose.
Yeah.
Right? Moose knuckle?
Yeah, right in.
Ate a lot of moose knuckle in your time? They have that out in Montana,
in the forests of Montana.
Well, it's a delicacy out there.
Yeah.
And delicacy in the Castro, too. When you do it, you feel like, I remember you saying this to me one time, that you felt like it was like a dude's diet, like a man's diet.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like, a lot of women aren't going to sit there eating steak and bacon all day and whatever meat most of the time. But it seemed like it's the kind of thing where it's easy, like you said, with the habits, where if you have a lot of bad habits, or you just don't have any, like, maybe discipline at the time.
Yeah. So, like, say I have a friend.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, this friend says he's just going to drink one Moscow Mule, but then that Moscow Mule comes out in a bucket instead. Yeah. And it's like, well, I said I was just going to have one.
Yeah.
That sort of restriction.
Right. Where it's like you don't have the ability to actually control your own actions. But the diet itself is so restrictive that it's really easy to follow. It's easy to just be like, right. I'm never going to drink. People with kind of extreme personalities, it's easy to be like, oh, just don't eat carbs. And it's way easier to adhere to rather than having to have a moderate approach where it's like, oh, I got to eat this much of this and this much of that. You can eat when you're hungry. You can kind of do those things.
Discipline is the biggest part of it all. I mean, you know, telling someone not to eat carbohydrates gets to be very simple. It's like read your food labels.
Right.
Pay attention to what you're eating. Another really simple tip is just not to eat and to eat less.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like it starts to get to be a very easy recipe as you dive into it deeper, but it's not always easy to follow.
Right,
you know, it's not always easy to follow that plan. Yeah, even something
easy
like,
and simple are definitely different things.
Yeah, right. You're right, 100% correct. That's a better term for it is saying that it's simple. Something like intermittent fasting. For years, I always thought that was just stupid. You know, I thought it was bullshit. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. You're just like not going to eat. But actually, if you think about it a little bit more, it does make some sense to have a denser portion of your day be devoted to food if you're somebody that really likes to eat.
Yeah.
You know, so, okay, you will go through a 10, 12, 14. Some people go all the way to 18 hours. I've messed with that a little bit. Didn't really like it much. So I do... I'm somewhere between 10 and 14 hours, just kind of depending on whatever happens. I don't even use it every day. I just, it's occasionally. I had breakfast this morning. It just kind of depends on the day, depends on the week, depends on what I'm faced with. But what happens is when you don't eat carbohydrates, you start to starve off that section in your brain that is giving you those strong pulses to eat more carbohydrates, because sugar makes you want to eat more sugar. At least that's the results that I've found. That's what happens to me. And then when you do intermittent fasting, you start to starve off some of the hormones that are produced that make you hungry. And so after a while, you become less hungry. You become adapted to that. You'll get used to that. When I've done intermittent fasting, it could be a day of podcasting and lifting and filming and photo shoots and conference calls and whatever else, and I feel fucking great. The only time I feel bad is actually when I eat.
Yeah.
So when you eat, that actually is a little bit of an issue with intermittent fasting, is that trying to manage when you eat, because then the cascade of things that happen following that, you get fucking really tired, and it takes a while to get used to it. But
you're talking like physically bad.
You're just fucking tired.
Game of what you just ate.
No. You're just pretty pretty tired. And to me, intermittent fasting seems to work a little bit better with some sort of carbohydrate regulation, because if you're to use it on a regular diet with a lot of influx of carbohydrates, it in my opinion might be a little tougher. just because you're going to probably get those pulses of food a little bit more.
So let's take a quick break for a strength history minute, and we'll see you in a minute.
Joe Doobie is an athlete I learned about from a conversation with John Bros at 2014 U.S. Weightlifting Nationals. Bros basically ruined my day and the idea that I'm good at squats when he told me about Joe Doobie squatting 770 for 17. It's since been confirmed by Joe Doobie's son that it was actually only 710 for 17, still a monstrous feat of squatting, particularly when you consider that this was done in the late 60s or early 70s. At most, the supportive gear was a weightlifting belt and ace bandage knee wraps. Doobie is the last American to win a world weightlifting championship, having brought home gold in the super heavyweight class in 1969. Doobie was also a bronze medalist in the 68 Mexico City Olympics. He also crossed over and was 7th place at 1979 World's Strongest Man. During Doobie's competitive days, weightlifting consisted of the snatch, clean and jerk, and clean and press. He was the first American to hit a 1,300-pound 3-lift total, setting 12 American and 4 world records. His best lifts of 210 kilos in the clean and press and 166 kilos in the snatch, plus his 710 for 17 squat, make him an all-time great strength athlete.
All right, so we've gotten some good information about Mark's current training, his diet, his experience with keto. Let's kind of move on from that. This week, you posted a really interesting video, I thought, talking about, you know, people who are open about steroid use versus people who are, you know, proclaiming natural all the time. And then I guess there's a middle ground, too, of people who just don't talk about it either way.
Right.
And, you know, of course, there's people lying about it. There's, we could make a whole other podcast probably about people who Max and I think are on and are competing in tested sport. But you really had no choice, I'd say, you know, in regards to the Slingshot brand, because when Bigger, Stronger, Faster came out, or
right,
what year was that, 2007?
It's almost 10 years ago now. Yeah, 2008.
Yeah. I remember seeing that in, like, an independent theater, mm-hmm. like, the week that it came out. And, you know, so that's, it's no secret to anyone. I mean, there's a whole movie about you taking steroids.
Right.
How do you think, and that was before the Slingshot was a...
Yeah, Slingshot was 2010.
Yeah, so yep. That was before the Slingshot was a glimmer in your eye.
Right.
You didn't really get to make the decision, like, oh, I'm going to be open about steroids and
right.
How is that going to affect Slingshot? How do you think, though, looking back, being in that and being open about that has affected positively or negatively the Slingshot brand?
Yeah, I mean... with, you know, so many influencers and so many YouTubers and stuff like that being natural or being proponents of being natural and the explosion of powerlifting through the IPF, USAPL, the drug-tested federations, I would like to say I don't think it has much impact, but it certainly does in some sense. But I don't think it's really affected things overall. Like, that might be a very minor thing. There's going to be people that don't like me for all kinds of reasons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the biggest mistake anybody can make is to invest too much into what everybody else is thinking, and also to look left and look right and really worry about what everybody else is doing. If I'm looking at the skits that you and Max are doing, I'm like, oh, I got to do fun stuff like that too. Like, that looks awesome.
Do you think that you really have these kind of acting?
No. That was going to be my next point, actually. I'm not an award-winning actor.
Expecting 2 Oscars.
Yeah.
Each.
Maybe 3. Who knows? Who knows? Yeah, like, it just doesn't make sense to go outside of the realm of what you can actually do. For me, I've always been somebody who's been pretty simple. When it comes to diet stuff, I've just kind of told you guys I don't weigh stuff. I mean, I'm not going to sit here with a calculator and be like, oh, man, I had, you know, 3,147 calories today versus what I had yesterday. Like, that's just not me. I don't do that. I'm not analytical. I don't know how to even make a spreadsheet. I barely know how to use my fucking computer. I don't own an actual computer. I don't have an office. I'm just, you know, I'm the way that I am, and I got to keep forging forward.
Yeah.
With that. And so I think we all are guilty of copycatting sometimes and losing some form of our originality. As a kid, you have tons of it. You know, if I told my daughter to make a, you know, just looking at you two guys and looking at this juggernaut stuff, and you told her a little bit about what the company is, I said, hey, draw something up on this this whiteboard of something that you think would be good for advertising, she'd make the cutest, funniest thing you've ever seen in your life. And you'd be like, where the hell did that even come from? Like, it'd be some imaginative, weird, she'd make a crab or a cat or a fucking lion or something with your head on it, and you'd be like, well, I have no idea where that came from. But those things are squandered away by people deflating your hopes and dreams of telling you, like, hey, like, that's not, that's, you know, you got to go to history class, and you got to go to math class, and you got to go here, and you got to go there. Can't be scribbling on your piece of paper, doing your, or sometimes you even run into other situations where kids that are naturally aggressive, that gets suppressed a lot. They're naturally active, like they want to fucking move a lot, and for some reason that's a negative thing. Like, oh, Billy wants to fucking move around a lot. I think he's retarded. We're gonna fucking throw him in some special class or whatever. It's like, well, maybe the motherfucker just wants to go outside for a minute. Like, let him fucking. You know, go outside and express himself, you know, let people express themselves. And so I think, you know, nowadays, you know, it's hard to have self-expression. It's hard to be unique because there's so many other people, there's so many other fish in the sea. But I think, you know, back to the original concept of the question is, you know, I think that you just have to try to stick to the principles and things that you believe in. I'm a true believer in trying to be. I mean, I'm not going to tell you guys fucking everything, and I'm not going to tell the public everything, but I like to try to be as transparent as I can. So that way, when I make a statement, when I say something, I can say it with conviction, and I can say it, and I can feel 100% about what I'm talking about, rather than like, you know, half-heartedly, you know, I only feel a little bit towards that thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's just totally genuine, whatever you're going.
Trying to always be, which gets to be hard. You know, as your business gets to move along, you know, people hate to talk about money. You know, people get offended. You know, meathead millionaire, like, fuck that guy. I'm not going to buy his shit. He's already fucking loaded. And maybe they might even like certain lifters because, like, certain lifters are more bare bones. Like, oh, I like that guy because he didn't have anything.
He's poor.
It's like, oh, maybe that guy should get a fucking job. You know, maybe that guy should figure his shit out. You know, I was listening to something that Joe Rogan said, like, you know, don't worry about the guy buying a new car and wanting to be fucking clean and wanting to look slick. He's like, maybe you should get a job. Maybe you should work harder. Maybe you should work towards those things. And I just kind of feel the same way. I realize that we are all different. And it is kind of cool when you do see people that are minimalist and they don't need a lot of stuff. They don't need a lot of fluff to, like, get ahead. I think that that's awesome as well. Furious Pete and my boy Omar Issaf are two guys that have created a culture in this YouTube world that has been fucking outrageous. You know, Furious Pete has like 4 million followers. It's insane. You know, I went out with him in Canada and we went to dinner and he got stopped, you know, 5, 6, 7 different times, which is quite a bit. You know, when you're just out on a random night and just people are stopping him and all fired up, taking pictures with him and stuff. And then, you know, Omar is at like 600,000 plus followers as well. Those guys are unique individuals. They're very authentic. You're not going to find people that are going to, you know, say a bunch of bad shit about them because they're transparent as well. They're not hiding anything. And then both of them just do all their own shit. They don't have a production team. They don't have, you know, I got four guys on my production staff because we are podcasting and YouTubing and doing various shit all the time. And I'm trying to get as much of that stuff out as I possibly can. But these guys do their shit in a different way. They're trying to maximize the income from the YouTube channel. And so they have a different approach with their business. And a lot of times they're editing and doing all their own stuff. They have like maybe one person that they might shoot some stuff to here and there, which is just insane because they put out tons of content as well.
Yeah, it's a ton of work. It seems like there's a lot of the drug thing is kind of an easy way for someone to break into a market or try and break into something, right? If you have if you aren't a great lifter or you aren't a big fitness person, you throw some drugs in the mix and suddenly you're playing ball with everybody else on some level. Or if you're, you know, a coach, you're not able to really produce it at any athletes, but then you get some people and they're on drugs, and so you kind of come up. It's that like, what do they do from there? Where it's like, if you built the foundation of your business on deceiving people on some level,
right,
then it becomes this rocky slope, I think, for people, or slippery slope for people, where do they just keep doing that? What's the next level of that deception?
Yeah.
And you never know exactly. I mean, most people probably go online, have no idea. You know, you see some guy who's ripped and has abs and doing something, and they don't know the wiser from that guy doing a bunch of, you know, Anavar and trend, right, to the guy who's naturally like that, who's been working like that for 15 years to get to that point. And it's the same kind of following, you know.
Or the James Townsend who just had
born like that, you
20
know?
Piece chicken nuggets and
right,
it gave him 4 new abs.
Yeah, and so I think that level of, like, if you get caught up too much with what everyone's doing and you're in the industry, you're going to get frustrated, because there's always going to be people coming up that are doing that are just jumping in, the new thing, the new this, capitalizing, trying to get a piece of the market or a piece of the money. No matter how legitimate you are, you're always going to be, you know, bombarded with that. So I can see where, you know, it's an interesting, you know, from a marketing, from a sale, from a business perspective, it makes sense for people. Why wouldn't they do that, you know?
You look at, like Rich Piana. You know, it's like
Natty, right?
Some people may not like him, you know, for various reasons, right? But the guy just went out and started doing his own fucking thing.
Yeah.
And for a while, he had the most popular YouTube channel in all of fitness. Huh. What am I gonna do? Sit there and cry about it? Am I gonna try to make my shit better? Make my stuff more me, or try to find a different pulse of the audience, and try to figure out, or try to have more meetings with my media staff on, like, hey, let's figure something, like, fucking Rich Piana, like, he's able to kill it. Bradley Martin's able to kill it. Maybe I don't want to be like Bradley Martin necessarily, but sure, I'd love to figure out how he attracted such a huge audience. It's fucking awesome. All I could do is kind of sit back and applaud it. And when it comes to the drug thing, you know, I don't know how much it really matters. I'm sure, like, again, on a micro level, it probably does matter a little bit. But in the grand scheme of things, it didn't seem to ever hurt Arnold. Didn't seem to ever hold back C.T. Fletcher or Rich Piana or some of these other guys. And I don't know if they're, like, stating or not stating, or I don't know what their stance is on whether they say they do stuff or not. But, I mean, Arnold's probably one of the most successful people in the history of the world, and he would not have been in that position without steroids. There's absolutely no question that he would not have been the same. He wouldn't have been looked up to the same way. It just would have never happened. And so, I think business is business, and having good content and good products is the foremost, most important thing. Like, you have what is it, like, Chick-fil-A? The owner of Chick-fil-A was, like, gay bashing, and he's a Bible beater. I believe that was the brand. I might be speaking wrong on that.
It was Chick-fil-A,
but I think it was that, and, like, it didn't hurt his company. You know, that's something that's hugely frowned upon nowadays, to take a stance on something like that and to openly almost hate on a community. And he's like, fuck that. This is the way I feel.
when the chicken is that good.
That's what I'm saying. The product's fucking good.
I think that, you know, my big takeaway from that is about, you know, staying in your own lane, or staying focused on yourself and trying to find the value in these other people, because it's easy, and I'm definitely guilty of doing this. It's easy to see what someone else is doing and to be a bit of a hater, to try and pick apart what's wrong with it. You know, and 95% of it could be, you know, wrong, cheesy, corny, dishonest, whatever it is, but maybe there is some value, something to be learned from it. You know, some value to be taken from it. And even if there's not, to not just get caught up in spending your energy, you know, trying to figure out or trying to say everything that's wrong with something else, rather, you know, just forget that it exists, basically, and just focus on your own stuff. And I think that idea of being, not self-centered, but introspective in a way from a business standpoint. If I could go back, coming up on eight years of Juggernaut in another 6 weeks or so, if I could go back 8 years and tell myself something, I definitely wasted energy, whether it was when we were in the first gym situation and just training athletes, looking at what other gyms in the area were doing and like, oh, they're doing this wrong and they're doing that wrong, rather than just focus on what we were doing and trying to make it the best. If you could go back to the start of Super Training Brand or Slingshot Brand and give a young rounder, Mark Bell, a piece of advice, business advice, what do you think that would be?
I think everything is, unfolded the way it needs to. I feel very fortunate. I feel very lucky. I say that often. And I think people are, a lot of times like, oh, you're selling yourself short. You work hard. I'm like, well, I recognize that I work hard, but a lot of people work hard. Yeah. I just feel that I'm very lucky. And I think that everything that's happened, every step of the way has happened the exact way that it needed to for me to get here. The issue with that is that the thinking that got me here, needs to change to get me to the next level. I believe that's a quote from Albert Einstein. But basically saying, I did think certain ways and thought certain things, and now some of it's got to change, because to really get to the next level of business is going to be probably the greatest challenge of my life. But the lifting career, falling with 1,085, Taryn Peck's, and Taryn Peck's made me a millionaire. Falling with 1,085 helped change my life for the better, because it gave me better perspective on a lot of things. I was so into powerlifting, and so it's good to take care of yourself, and it's good to like you were just mentioning, it's good to take care of yourself and pay attention to yourself. But like, I was not taking care of myself, because I was so obsessed with powerlifting that I was reckless, and that's not fair. That's not fair to me. That's not fair to the people that work for me. That's not fair to people that love me and people that are close to me. And it just really doesn't make any sense. But if I didn't fall with that weight, then I wouldn't have known better. That kind of had to happen. I ended up knowing a lot of stuff because of my dad. My dad is like, he tells me stuff, and I sometimes think that like music's gonna start playing and the room's gonna go dark and there's gonna be a fucking light on him, like he's giving me like epic speech all the time, and I'm like, fuck man, I wish there was a camera around for some of this stuff. He's a great motivator, but he has always kind of given me general information, like just general stuff. And I remember when I was first kind of kicking around Super Training Gym. I'll give you the story of the name of Super Training Gym, because not many people know that story. But when I first started Super Training Gym, he said, it's going to take you like, because he knew about Westside, and he knew what they were doing. And he was like, if you are trying to build something like that, or you're trying to build a culture that's going to be really strong and powerful and build a community that you're looking to build, he's like, it's going to take you like a long time. And I was like, no, I was like, oh, I know. He's like, no, I mean, like, it's going to take you a really long time, like long time. And I'm like, how long are you thinking? He's like, decade minimum. It's going to take you at least 10 years.
Yeah.
And he's been right, and I think that things will, it's been 10 years, but I think that things will continue to get better. I was never really trying to set out to have necessarily the strongest gym in the world or anything like that. We say strongest gym in the West. It's just a play on words. And it's more about the community than it is actual like numbers. Yeah. Like, oh, they're full of shit. This guy's got, it's like we can get into a numbers game, and I'm sure people could beat me all day on a bunch of different stuff like that. But Yeah, you know, I think things have kind of unfolded the way that they needed to. Things with my family life, things with my business, the Slingshot coming along when it did, Power Magazine coming along when it did, Super Training coming along when it did. So to give you that story on the name of the gym, have you guys heard this before?
Is it from the book?
Yeah, it's from the book. But have you heard the actual story of it before?
No.
Okay. So there's as everybody knows that's listening to this, there is a very long-winded book that no one can transcribe, even though it's...
James Smith's the only person that's read it.
Yeah. Only person ever.
Probably.
Your former roommate.
Yeah.
So there's a book called Super Training written by a guy named Mel Siff. Years ago, there was a seminar in Las Vegas, and I don't know why the seminar was in a basement, but it was in a basement. And it was a seminar that had Louis Simmons and Mel Siff. And some of the people that showed up to that seminar were James Smith, Joe Ken, Coach House, the now Minnesota Vikings strength coach. I just call him Uwe, so I don't know how to say his name.
Mark Uyama.
There you go. And there was like five or six other people that ended up becoming something in the industry. And so it's kind of a funny thing that we all share going to that seminar. The seminar was called Super Training. So I go to the seminar, and Mel Siff is talking. I have no idea what he's talking about. Yeah. Louis's talking. I have no idea what he's talking about. I'm like, this is great. I've paid money that I don't have to come to a seminar and not understand one word of what's going on, you know. So then we break for lunch, and I look at some of the books that they have. I'm like, I got to get, like, a book because I don't know what they're talking about. I have no idea what's going on. And I'm thumbing through a couple things that they have up there, and I'm looking at the book Super Training. And I'm like, holy shit, this is, like, really way over my head. But I'm kind of thinking maybe I should get it because maybe it shouldn't be so far over my head. And so I'm kind of looking through the book, and Mel Siff walks past, and he was like, oh, are you thinking about picking up the book? And it was like $80 or something. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I was like, I got to, you know, go to an ATM, but I'm kind of thinking, I don't think I have $80,
right,
you know, if I can buy the book. I was like, I'll come back, you know, after lunch probably and get it. And he goes, you know what, why don't you just keep it? And he goes, you can probably use it and probably be useful to you someday. And I was like, okay, cool, sure. You know, so I kept the book, and about a week later, he passed away. Wow. And then so when I started Super Training Gym, and I started kind of kicking around some different ideas of the name of a gym, I contacted his wife. It was really hard to get in touch with her. At the time, there was, like, you know, there's obviously email and some different things like that, but it was the only way to get a hold of some people is through, like, these weird threads and shit. So I had to go on, like, a Super Training thread, and I saw her name on there, and she was talking about him passing away and stuff. So I contacted her through there and basically just said, you know, I'd love to use the name of that book to name my gym. And she was like, oh, you don't, you know, you didn't have to do that. And she's like, that's a great way to carry on your name, carry on his name and the name of the book. And hopefully your gym will be successful one day so it can continue the name. And so
is there anyone who ever asked you if you wrote the book Super Training?
There's been a lot of people that have asked me that. Yeah. They want me to sign it. Forwarded by Mark Bell.
That's really cool. That's a great story.
That is good. Let's take another quick break for a minute to get to know Max Montana.
My parents named me the story I was told why my middle name is Montana. In the early 80s, when my parents moved from the East Coast to Montana, they were huge fucking hippies, and they decided to call me Montana. I think honestly, actually, my dad was probably in the witness protection program, because he just left. They just left New Jersey out of nowhere and totally moved to Montana. There was no one there. It was a small town, Bozeman. It was like 30,000 people at the time. And I was born there. We used to live in this, like, log cabin. We had a... My dad was like a record salesman, kind of sold, like, videos and records and stuff. And that was just coming out. VHS was just coming out at the time. And he started a farm. So, like, he had this, like, this farm thing, this, like, geese and other weird animals and stuff like that, and he was just no idea what he was doing. I look back on it now and I realize my dad was like, he was crazy. So, you know, they named me Montana. All my other brothers, sisters all have normal names. My brother escaped the name Darth. It would have been called Darth Ada, which I think now actually would be kind of fitting and cool. But, you know, so I grew up in Montana the whole time, lived in this log cabin. At one point in time, there would be like mushrooms and like weeds and stuff growing up through the floor. So we were like in the woods, basically. I mean, it was legit, the full Montana experience.
All right, so I just got that really cool story about the name of the Super Train, Jim. And for those people who follow Mark on Instagram, which is probably everyone that's listening or watching, they see some new activity, some big warehouse buildings you're posting pictures of. So what's some things you can share with us about the future of Super Train and Slingshot?
Yeah, just a little spot that I started building a couple years ago. And we've been checking out this location for a while. You know, it's been a long time coming, trying to have the company match, have the brand and the company match, kind of like more like not just where we are, but where we're going. You know, and I've always kind of said that that's what I want to be able to do. So, you know, I started looking around West Sacramento a little bit and found the spot. It's a little over 20,000 square feet, and we're going to be able to put everything under one roof. And our store that we have now at Super Training Gym does generate some good money, but it's like a closet, and it's like an offshoot of the whole thing, and no one even knows it's there. So with this new gym idea and stuff like that, and expanding a free gym, which is a weird thing, but it'll have a much larger store. It'll be like an actual store. So the concept is to kind of make it so nice that when you walk in, you kind of can't help but like buy something on the way in and the way out, even for my regular members who, you know, may not always purchase stuff because we hand it to them and stuff like that. Maybe because the gym's free, maybe they'll kind of get the idea, hey, I should, you know. And we do have a lot of guys that do participate in buying stuff, which, like,
take the fucking hint already.
Which is nice. So basically I'm going to spend $20,000 a month on this facility to make sure that I sell stuff to people that train there for free.
Well, that's a bold strategy, Kevin. So it works out for you.
Yeah, see, something like that. Clever man.
So you're really
a bad person here.
Yeah, so I'll have the warehouse, under one roof as well, and that'll make things a lot easier in terms of the store and in terms of our just functionality in general. Like, sometimes we hear Chad is like in the area or somebody's in the area, and we've got to go and figure out how to get a pair of 6XL knee sleeves, and we don't normally have them at the gym or whatever.
Just cut the 3XLs open and sew them together.
Yeah, there you go. And so now we have a spot where that will have everything in it. And so there's a couple concepts behind it, but it'll still be the same thing. It'll still be fucking free, and it will still be a lot of the same way that it is now.
Well, I remember when you made the gym free. That was probably 2012, around then, and I didn't even know, you know, I only visited probably a few times, did meets and stuff there, but I wasn't even aware. Like, when you made it free, it was kind of interesting to me, because I was like, well, what's he doing for money if he's not charging people at the gym? But it's an interesting, like, what kind of things changed amongst the members and amongst the people when you actually did that? Like, did you feel like you attracted a different crowd, or you know, the mentality of people changed? Or
I've said this before, but I can never repay. I can't put a dollar amount back to what Super Training has given to me. The Slingshot was invented inside the walls of Super Training Gym, and then a lot of the best memories I have of my life period have happened inside the walls of Super Training Gym. So, you know, I always knew that by making that leap of making the gym free, I always knew that it would bring me like wealth, riches in some way, and not just in terms of money, in terms of giving to people. And I am a big believer in, giving to people, and you'll receive back tenfold. And, you know, when I did it, I think there was a little hesitation on my part, at least, where I was like, I don't really know if it's going to work, but I think it's going to work. And by making it free, it ended up changing things immensely. Just the people I've met from turning it free, the people that have come in the gym, not only is it free, but we are also not like we're overly welcoming, because we'll give you a cold shoulder here and there, because that's the way powerlifting kind of needs to be. You need at least a little bit of that, because that's just the way it's always been, right? Like, you need some of that. You need to be scared a little bit when you go in a powerlifting gym, right? Like, I don't know if these guys are going to punch me or what's going on in here. So there'll always be a little bit of that, but we try to be pretty welcoming of people. And so through that, you know, we've had people from all over the world visit the gym. And on top of that, I ended up with some great employees. Silent Mike worked for me for 5 or 6 years. He was a big part of the company, expanding. And then, you know, more recently, guys like Smokey. I've met Chris over there through an event at the gym. I met Andrew, who's another one of my, he's one of my photographers. Met him through an event at the gym as well. And so, and then Jessica Smith that works for us as well. Charlie Zamora. I mean, these all have been people that have kind of been circulating around the gym. And now they're people that, Smokey, for example, he has like the most direct impact on finances, because he sells advertising space on our podcast. He sells ad space in Power Magazine, and he's, so by having him, you know, come to a gym that's free, you know, $125 a month, you rack that up, but then you start to rack up the amount of money that he's generated for the company. I mean, it's paid back times 1,000 probably or more. I don't even know. But anyway, it has paid off in so many different ways.
That's cool.
Very cool. Yeah, the that's something. I mean, if people don't grasp this about you from social media or anything, is that you are incredibly generous, and you've had me up there, you know, flown me up there, picked me up in a limo, stocked with chocolate milk to go to the gym, you know, take to eat, which can, you know, I'll order a few plates of barbecued albacore.
Yeah,
let me stay in your home, and that. I think you do have a real heart for helping the powerlifting community, and I hope that people do understand that. You know, maybe they just see cool cars and vacations and stuff on Instagram sometimes, but there's a lot of generosity and caring about the, you know, helping the community out with that.
Right. Yeah, a lot of that just comes from my family. My family's always been that way. All growing up, there was always somebody over the house, you know, from my parents' church or something like that. You know, they would have just people that maybe were not as, not like they were poor or anything, but people that were not in as good of a position. Right. Or maybe it was a family friend that was going through a divorce or something, and my parents would let them stay there for a little bit. Or my brother had a few friends that had some, you know, family issues when he was like in high school. The guy stayed with us for like 3 months, you know, stuff like that. So I've always saw that as a kid, and I'm like, that doesn't cost anything to, like,
yeah,
you know, it literally can cost a little bit because you're paying for food and some things like that. But it doesn't cost you anything to be nice to somebody.
Right.
It doesn't cost you anything to open a door for somebody or to fucking smile at people. It doesn't cost you anything. So why not do it? It can make you feel fucking great. It can make that person feel great. It can change people's lives. And that's kind of what I've been always trying to promote.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, like, people see you guys joking around in some of these videos, or they see me making a fucking rap video or something. They might think, oh, these guys are jerks. Like, they're, you know, making a mockery of something, or they might think that I'm taking myself too serious or whatever. And it's just like, it's all really just to fucking entertain myself and to make it through the day. You know, at the end of the day, I'm just trying to forge forward and to keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Well, yeah, I don't think anyone laughed harder during the commando video than Max and I did during the making.
Yeah, during the filming. Yeah.
And that was mostly due to the tickling.
Yeah.
But,
oh, of course.
Oh. Yeah. I was a ticklish guy.
One bear has to tickle.
Chad resisted it, but I requested. I requested.
Has Alyssa Milano emailed you?
Not yet. I'm pretty sure she's going to.
Yeah.
Any minute now.
I wonder if your email's like crashed or something.
It might. Yeah, you should check my spam folder probably.
Yeah,
it might be in there. Yeah.
Odds. I didn't hear from her.
amoana@aol.com?
Yeah. She has an AOL. She's probably using AOL.
JennyMatrix@aol.com. Well, Mark, thank you.
That's right. Nah.
Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to come down here to join us. We're always a big fan of the PowerCast, so glad
thank you
that we could have you on here. Now, as you are watching this, it is at minimum Tuesday, July 18th. On this day, and for the next few days, the book Weightlifting Technique Triad is on presale. The first book by Max Montana. Max, what can people expect when they read this?
You wrote a book?
I wrote a book.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's
about time.
It's a book. Basically, you're going to learn the basic kind of universal understanding of the Olympic lifts, the technique, and then we're going to break down in that how I like to look at them and how I like to assign the exercises that we use to fix different weaknesses. There's some practical information in there, too. You know, you can look up your own maybe common errors you have and find solutions that I've used and solutions that are pretty common from this school of thought and how to fix those things. So,
right. Yeah. So from Tuesday the 18th through the morning of Friday the 21st, the book's on presale. That's the lowest price it'll ever be. Plus, you'll get access to a special webinar with Max. From there, from the morning of the 21st through midnight on Sunday the 23rd, you'll be able to get it for an early discount price and still get access to that webinar. And then after that, it's the normal price. So if you're looking to understand weightlifting technique better, to, as you've heard us talk about on Jug Life episodes before, to not just think of it as this is good technique and that's bad technique, the Chinese pull is better than the Russian pull or anything like that, but to understand the why behind what makes something more effective for lifter A versus lifter B, I think it's a really, really useful tool for that. So make sure to visit the link down in the info or up in the corner and check out Max's book, The Weightlifting Technique Triad. Beyond that, juggernautcoaching.com for all your online coaching needs, powerlifting, weightlifting, super totaling. You perhaps could be doing super training to make a super total.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, because we don't know how to Olympic lift.
Yeah, the last
that's
time
where we got to get the book.
The last time I was up there, God, I can't remember his name. It might have been Austin. Was it Austin?
Yeah, Baumgartner? Austin Baumgarten, yeah.
He did some strongman for a minute.
Yeah.
He came up to me, and he's like, hey, can you like check out my form in this clean? And I was like, caught off guard, and I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. I mean, it was very power lifty.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was funny that he just was, just kind of asked. I mean, it was horrendous, but it was one of those things where you're like, oh, it's kind of funny.
We don't know how to put weights over our head like that.
Yeah, it was good.
Real
was
weird, cool. Weird looking deadlifts.
Yeah, it's very strange.
So make sure to visit juggernautcoaching.com for more info about that. Max and I have a couple clinics coming up. We will be in Buffalo, New York, with Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas. They'll all be in attendance at our Super Total Clinic at Mustache Fitness and Barbell on August 26th and 27th, so you can sign up for that. I still have a couple spots left for my powerlifting programming lectures in Philadelphia in September, Minneapolis in October. You and Pomp are going to be in Rochester.
We'll be in Rochester, New York, August 6th or October 6th. And I have one in Santa Barbara on September 8th, I believe is the day. Yeah.
Isn't that
AO3? No, it's not September 8th then.
18th?
18th. It's the week after the week after that. Oh.
I'll maybe double check that
it'll
one.
It'll be up on the Instagram, yeah.
So yeah, if you're interested in any of that, store.jtsstrength.com under events. Besides that, if you like the podcast, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. Maybe one day we'll even be as ranked as highly as the PowerCast. And if you like the video, subscribe to our YouTube. Thank you very much for watching. Thanks, Mark.
Later.
Thanks, Max.
First so handshake. Yeah.
All right. It's weird. It's actually really weird feeling to shake someone's hand that you know really well.
Right.
Yeah, it gets really awkward.